Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Live. My name is Paul Hill, and I'm delighted again to be able to speak to accomplished investor Richard Crowe, alias Cockney Rebel. So welcome, Richard.
Cool. Yep. Lovely day outside. We've got some sunshine at last. The old current bun's shining, so get the mankini on later.
Yeah, no, it certainly makes a change, that's for sure.
It does.
Exactly. And we've also had sort of like a ton of macro data alongside the sort of calling of a general election and the 80th anniversary of the D-Day landings, with the markets at just about all-time highs at the moment. Yeah. But before we sort of run through your outlook for equities going forward, I don't suppose you could quickly remind the audience of what type of stocks you like.
Yeah, I like small caps, and in particular, I like recovery plays, so I like to find companies that have been around a while. I'm not that great at picking out new companies that have just recently floated. They don't have a good enough long-term history for me, so I like to find recovery plays that have got an history. They're bombed out usually, and you can see where they've been. And if once you can see where they've been, you can check there's been no dilution of any sort, you can have a good idea of where they can get back to. So I like that, and at the base of a market at the moment, I'm looking for stocks that can one bag in a year. So I call them OBIA stocks. That's one bag in a year. So OBIAY, OBIA sounds like the latest striker for Arsenal, but it isn't. It's a stock that can double in a year. And if I pick a portfolio of those and just several come good, then they're more than wipe out any of the losses that you might get from any that don't make it. But I think in this sort of market, you can pretty much find a lot of good stocks that have got that potential. So that's how I like to invest. It's not as easy once the market gets nearer the top, because trying to find stocks that are going to double then, everybody's in there. But there's always some recovery plays to find, where you can find something that's got 1 year potential to double. So hopefully more than double in a year. There's, I don't object to a five bagger in a year if I find one.
Well, you should definitely trademark that acronym, that's for sure. And how's the sort of Richard Crowe portfolio been performing so far this year after the sort of the first 5 months?
The first 5 months, I'm up 26% so far. I'm down 1% this week, so it wiped off. I was 27% last week, so That's a good return. I remember from the base in October to December, I was up 40%. And I remember saying at the beginning of the year, if you can do 40% again on 40%, because your capital's grown, you can double your money in a year. And but you're only going to do that when markets are bottoming. That's the only time you get that sort of performance. It's hard to do that when markets are near the top. So I need to do another 12-13%, say, between now and October to double in a year. So I didn't think that was going to happen at the beginning of the year. First stock that came out, watches of Switzerland in January, lost 3% on that one. And then I lost 1% in Alfreds, and that sort of like, we looked like we're going to mess the whole party up. But we keep having a few more months like this, and maybe I'll do it. So we'll see.
Yeah, you've done absolutely brilliant. I mean, 27% year to date. I mean, just to put that into perspective, I think AIM is only up about sort of 4 or 5% for the whole year for small caps market. I think the FTSE All Shares, the last time I saw, was about 8 or 9% up. So you've massively overachieved. And I mean, my portfolio has been a laggard. I think I'm down about 3%. So you beat me by 30. So I've got a long way to get back up.
If FTSE 250, I use that as a bit of a benchmark, and I can usually beat what the FTSE 250 does by, you know, double what it actually does. So if it's up 6%, I can usually do 12. And if it goes down 3%, I'm down 1.5% usually, because, you're picking the better stocks in amongst these stocks that are in the index. So if you're a stock picker, you ought to be able to find yourself, you know, you'll be able to outperform the indexes anyway. But so far this year, I'm up 4 times the FTSE 250, which I've never done before. Yeah. So it's particularly good. But I've reduced the number of holdings I've got as well. I've tried really meticulously to try and keep my holdings down to about 15 or 16 this year. I always try that in the past, but they creep up 22, 23. And in the end, you have to have a culling session and get rid of all the small bits that have got in there, like little trays that you've hung on to. But this year, I've really concentrated on keeping a small amount of really good stocks, and it's paying dividends this year. So,
yeah, but that's about our similarity for this year, though, because I only have about sort of like 15 to 20. I did hear that Paul Scott as well. He basically, having had a tremendous 2023, flew into a bunch of small cap speculative, really micro nano caps, and then decided he's dispersing his returns over too many stocks. So yeah, keeping a handful of sort of like your top picks seems to be a good winning strategy. But just in terms of sort of like, you know, stock selection, beating the FTSE 250, I mean, there's a lot of active managers actually who have paid a lot of money who can't beat the FTSE 250. Yeah. You're a bit modest there, Cotney, that's for sure.
It's not, when you're handling that sort of amount of money, they've got, you know, they're holding 100 stocks, so the chances of massively beating the market is more difficult. It's an achievement if they're managing that sort of amount of money and they're holding like 100 stocks to try and get that far. You know, they're limiting their risk, you know, to virtually nil risk, really, for their clients. But the cost of that is that you're not going to get the gains that, you know, an individual can get. So that's the beauty of doing it for yourself and being a stock picker. So, you know, there's a lot of good fund managers out there, but they're just constrained by, you know, things like ESG and stuff like that they have to follow that I don't. You know, so a lot of these companies now are basing their investment decisions on, you know, whether a company is globally friendly. And at the end of the day, you know, it's a fight to the bottom. We'll end up with loads of investments that are all absolutely clean and doing nothing to the earth, but there's no no gains there to be had. So that's the lucky bit of being an individual investor, I think.
Yeah. Well, if you ever decide to set up Cotney Rebel Asset Management, I'll bung you a few, Bob. That's for sure. I think a lot of other people would do as well. Now, just turning to the general election, obviously it caught a lot of people sort of off guard, the suddenness of the actual decision to go for the general election or the actual voting on the 4th of July. In terms of sort of like the indices and in the UK, do you see any sort of things that people should watch out for? You know, let's just assume, for argument's sake, the spread bettors are right and the odds checkers correct that we are going to see a majority Labour government. Is there any sort of risks to sort of like, you know, investors we should be aware of?
Parliament wouldn't be good. You know, that could create more indecision. So the market seems to be pricing in a Labour government now. You know, yeah. I think if there's anybody out there who doesn't think Labour's going to be the next government, then they've been hiding under a boulder for, you know, so long. But I always say, and they say this, you know, a week's a long time in politics. And, you know, anyone can lash up quite easily and you know, drop a ricket that turns things around completely. And, it's dangerous to count your chickens. When, you know, I had a bet on, you know, when Cameron got back in again and joint government between them and the Lib Dems, everyone was telling me that Cameron wasn't going to win. I had a bet on that. So I love contrary bets. And I had a bet on that, and that came out winning, because I know people get people start to believe the polls too much. You can believe in these polls too much, and because they're polled every day and everyone's saying similar thing, what people actually do in the polling booth is different to what people say to a canvasser in the street. A lot of people are embarrassed to say who they vote for. And, you know, so they don't want to, even a canvasser, they won't necessarily tell them the truth. But in the privacy of a polling booth, you know, and I think you probably see that a lot of that with Reform Party. I think a lot of people are embarrassed to say that they'll vote for Reform Party. But I hear lots of people saying to me, they won't vote Labour, but they won't vote Tory, but they can't vote Labour. Mm-hmm. So you're not left with an awful lot of choice there. If you're not going to vote for those two, you either abstain or you vote for, and the, you know, Reform Party's come up over the last few days since Farage has done. So there's always that, you know, like Farage suddenly becoming the leader of Reform has suddenly put another spanner in the works as to people forecasting what's going to happen. So I think you just got to go with it. You know, we're going to have an election in, I don't know, 4 weeks' time. Is it 4 or 5 weeks' time? And whoever gets in is probably going to be hopeless, whoever they are. They're not going to, you know, they'll be true to form and nothing much changes, I don't think. You know,
well, one thing which could change, which is sort of like, you know, you look at sort of nationalisation of industries. You've obviously had Labour already saying that it's going to nationalise the franchises of the rail industry. What about sort of insourcing of sort of like third-party contractors into the NHS, the healthcare? Because obviously that's a really sort of like, you know, a sore point. And likewise with the energy, because another political sort of like hot potato. Do you see sort of like these more sort of traditional Labour policies potentially coming to the fore as they sort of absorb into the public sector those third party services? Do you see there's any risk associated with those?
Well, you should know better than anyone, knowing who I am and who my brother was, not to talk to me about the trains.
just for the benefit of everybody else, Richard's brother was Bob Crow, who was a traditional unionist.
RMT union leader. Yeah. So so I grew up with him and everything. So politics is, and my dad was the same. So politics, it was quite big in the house, and I struggled to get away from it. And but in all honesty, I think, you know, most of these. Now, a lot of things Labour wants to do are probably good things for the economy, but just you just sit there, you know, it's got to be done sensibly, hasn't it? You just want to be, you know, if you start suddenly taxing everything and cutting everything, then you stymie the growth of the country. Mm. And what you've got to do is get growth, and then from the growth, take the money from growth and use it. And I think a lot of the things they want to do is good, but you've got to grow the country first. You've got to grow the economy. And it's, you know, great having, you know, all these laudable aims for everybody. You know, it's nice to give everybody a pull up.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, it's no, you can want to pull everybody up. If you've got no money to do it, it's a waste of time. So grow the, you know, make sure they grow the economy. And I think, you know, what we saw with Truss, if you don't do the right thing, the pound's going to come to hit you anyway. So if they do anything too dangerous, the pound's going to plummet and they're going to be raising interest rates to, yeah, you know, steady the currency. So they've got to tread a fine line between what they do. Mm. So I think once they actually get in, people will actually realise that it's not going to be much different to what the Tories were doing. Neither of these governments are going to have any money to spend.
Yeah.
They're just not being honest with us. You know, we're just going to learn that things carry on much like they were with a little bit of difference. So I think I'm positioned for whatever happens. You know, I think as long as there's not a hung parliament, we've got three parties trying to run the country, then we will be in a mess. But
good,
Okay.
Well, I'll just remind anybody, if you want to put some questions into the, we'll ask Richard any questions. Just put them into the chat box. We've had plenty already. Let's just start with a quick one here. We've got Crypto Load One asking, "What's Richard's favourite? Who is Richard's favourite investor?" Now, I've got a guess actually, but I won't put sort of like words in your mouth there.
Me? It's me. I'm my favourite investor.
What about Andy Brough?
Andy's good. I like Andy. I've watched him for 25 years, I think, probably getting on for 25 years when he used to come on Bloomberg. Mm. And it's all about common sense. You know, he's one of these guys that just talks the, you know, look at it in a common sense. It's not a very deep, intense thing to learn how to invest in good companies. You know, I try to find, you know, good companies like he tries to find, things that have been, that investors have suddenly thrown the towel in and decide they can't, you know, they can't buy this company anymore, and basically they're very cheap. So yeah, he's one of the few that I think you know, good. I think he knows it. Better not say too much. He'll get big headed if he sees it.
Yeah, you're probably right. Okay, yeah. Okay. Now we've had another one. It's come from Perma Retail Limited. Morning, gents. He says, any thoughts on the trajectory of CMC Markets? Apparently, they've got a big major update on Monday. Obviously, the shares have had a rocket ship over the last, in fact, year to date, I think. And I know Paul Scott and Graham Neary of Stockopedia tipped them. But what's your sort of your latest on this one? Because it is a bit of a, it's done brilliantly.
Yeah, I thought they were having an update on Monday. I thought it was about 21st or the 25th that they've got their results out on.
Oh, okay. So maybe it's not Monday.
Yeah. But it's cracking stock, really, because when you have a look back, I don't know how many people realise this, but they sort of had a year or two of deep investment where they ploughed loads of money into new systems and software systems. They've gone out to the Far East in Singapore, and that's a hub now for Far East investors. Aside from that, you know, now they've ended all this investment. You know, the investment they've been doing, which included a lot of, I would imagine, tech bods that have been doing all the software. And they've said that in the coming year, they're going to save 21 million in costs. They're taking, I think it's a 4 million or 2.5 million pound hit this year for some costs, but they'll get 21 million back in the coming year. So if you look at it, they're forecast to do 14.6 pence earnings per share this year.
Yeah, I've got slightly more actually. I've got 17p. So
17p. Well, they lost 0.8 pence in the first half. So they're going to have done 17.8p in the second half.
Yeah.
So which makes the forecast look ridiculously low. If that's what they've done in the second half, and they're going to save, what is it, 21 million next year? I'll work that out to be at least 5 or 6 pence earnings to add on to next year for the savings they're going to go. They've got Far East B2B coming in. They've got SIPs and ISAs that they're also doing. So they've really spent a lot on trimming out people in the business and using more and more software, more and more clever software. The market's also starting to pick up. So you've heard it from IGX, I think, and AJ Bell and Hargreaves Lansdown all saying that things are starting to, you know, they're getting busier. So all in all, it's a great market, but the operational gearing here is just massive. Yeah. Like if you look back somewhere, I think off my head, 2018 or something, they were doing something like 17 pence earnings on half the sales they're doing at the moment. Mm. So if they've trimmed a lot of staff from 2018 and they're going to do double the sales they were doing in 2018, it's easy to see that they could do 40p, 50p. I think when we had COVID going on, they were doing 70 pence earnings. Mm. And that's before they did all this cost saving. So I think well-run company, and shame IG Index and a few others not run as well as this one's been run. And on top of that, they've got about 180 million in unencumbered cash. So yeah. Net cash, you wipe that off the market cap. It's trading on PE, it's trading on ridiculously low PE.
Yeah.
So all in all, it just looks. And also they say they're going to pay half the earnings out in dividends. Mm. You know, so I'm thinking if they get to making 40 pence earnings, there's 20p dividend coming here somewhere down the line, not far away.
Yeah.
So it just looks remarkably cheap, even after watching it rally. I think I've nearly two bagged my money in those now. I bought them just late December, just as the chart was turning up, and just bought the bowl.
Yeah.
And I put the bowl on the time at Twitter, thinking it was just going to be a little small move. And then and a week later, they come out with a trading update, which just sent it up 20%. Before I could even have time to top slice and take some money out, they came out with another thing saying they were going to cut 21 million in costs. And then, you know, looking at them and you study it more, and you think, blimey, these are still cheap. And then they've come out and said they're going to actually beat that, and they're going to, they've found more costs that they can cut as well. So it's the gift that keeps on giving there at the moment. So,
yeah, no, you're right. You raise a really good point there, Richie. I mean, I'm a bit of a sort of like a cheapskate, and I would look at the chart and say, well, I've missed it here. But actually what you're saying rationally is that if they can do, you know, sort of 40p of EPS or even say 35, whatever it is, and then you put a normal industry multiple. And I was just looking at, we've got IG Index on 10 times. You've got plus 500 at 9 times. But you've got AJ Bell on about 15. And I think Hargreaves Lansdowne, when I last looked, were about 12 or 13. So let's just blend that and use a, let's just use a simple sort of 12 times multiple on 35p. I mean, you basically get £4, don't you? Easy. And so, so what you're saying is that don't get caught up in being a cheapskate and saying you've missed the boat. Just look at where the shares could track to or head to, even though they've moved, which is more important than trying to kick yourself if you've missed the boat.
I think it's far more important to buy shares on highs than it is to average down on lows. You know, if you're buying more shares of a stock that's going up, you're doing the right thing. If you're buying more shares of a stock that's going down, it's, you know, all you're doing is buying more trouble probably down the line when it actually does turn out to be a problem. And you've got even more of stuff you don't want. A good stock, I far sooner average up than average down.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think I've been buying these up to this price, you know, even though I bought in, I keep tickling in and having a few more when I see a little pullback and keep adding to it. And like you say, a P of 12 wouldn't be outrageous, especially if they're growing earnings at that sort of pace and you've got that operational gearing that, yeah, perhaps the likes of Hargreaves Lansdowne and AJ Bell haven't. IG Index is trading on a, you know, if it's trading on about 9, it's not been a great performer, IG Index. So you can see why it'd be 9, but a high performer like this, you can easily see that the PE could go well over 12
for
that
easily.
Sort of growth rate. If they maintain this growth rate for 2 or 3 years or something, a decent growth rate, you know, you'd still be buying a peg of under 1, which is great in any, wherever you are, no matter what you're doing, if you can get a peg under 1, you're buying cheaply.
Yeah, usually. No, I would agree. Okay, well, let's move to same sector. Another rocket ship. Let's go to Funding Circle. Now, I was actually down at Mellow in Cheswick last month, and I was lucky enough to listen to Richard Staveley, who's a bit of a rock star, active fund manager who runs Rockwood Strategic. And he was talking about Funding Circle, and he'd been trying to get into it. And I know you've sort of like you bought, but it's done brilliantly well over this year to date. Can you take us through your latest thoughts on this one and how much further you think it's got to go?
It's quite funny because I bought these about a year or so ago, maybe 18 months ago, and they were doing, I kept reading about them, and I knew they got loads of cash. And you know, the market, even if you bought them then, you know, the market was still going down. You fight the market that just said, no, I don't want to touch any of these little small AIM stocks. And they just continued to travel down. And it was just impossible to sit there holding, thinking they're going to carry on going up. So I came out of them. But I did have a bit of an understanding of what the company did when this trading update came out. But as it happens, I was a bit busy elsewhere when the actual statement came out. And then I looked at it. And it had already gone up. I think it went, where were we? It was down like below 30 pence. It had already gone up to somewhere like 35, getting on towards 40. I thought, oh, there'll be a pullback here. It won't carry on going up straight. Wait for the pullback. Didn't happen. And it got to the bit where it just sort of curved over. And then I kept a watch then and thought, I'll try and catch the dip here when I can. They do funding for small businesses. They don't provide the finance. They're just like a conduit, an intermediary for the financing.
But it's a platform, isn't it? They do small B2B financing. Well, so for companies, but you're right. They just join the investors with the companies that need the loans.
Yeah, and it's all done on machine learning. So they actually have got 10 years or so of data. And they go through this, and like they'll pick out, say, like a, I don't know, it'll be like a record company or something like that, or somebody who builds guitars, and they'll go through and look at all the companies that are quite similar to that, and they'll say to themselves, right, put all this data in. How often does this company go bust? You know, what are the pitfalls for that particular small company in that sector? And with machine learning, they are actually 3 times more accurate than going through Expedia or someone like that the banks use. So it's a very accurate way. And the financing, the people who provide the finance like it because they know that it's gone through this method of assessing the people that want the loan, the business that wants the loan, and it's very accurate. For the people at the other end who want the loan, who've gone to the banks and, you know, the time it takes to get a loan from a bank is, you know, God knows how long. But when you go through Funding Circle, they'll give you an agreement in principle within an hour. So it's very quick and very efficient. And so the main thing is they've got two things. They've got the loan book that they've got for small businesses, and they've also got this card called FlexiPay, which is like a credit card, but it's more suited to businesses. That's growing. I think the transactions on that have gone up 400% over the past, or 300% over the past year. So the trend to about 250 million nearly. So they've got a great little business in this FlexiCard that's growing. The loan business is making about 5 million a year at the moment in the UK, or 7 million somewhere. So that side of the business is profitable. They've sort of mirrored this out in the States. And so when they've gone out to there, they're doing the exact same thing. But out in the States, they've just changed the rules for the lending. So they'd have to stump up a lot more money now that they never used to guarantee these loans. And that sort of like messed up their model out there, really. So what they're going to do is sell the American business off. But the interesting thing is they got this SBA license, which is like Small Business Authority, and it gives them the ability to do these loans. Well, there's only been three of these licenses issued in the last 40 years, and Funding Circle's got one of them. So I'm thinking that, you know, if there's not many of these about and there's only been three issued, they should be attractive to another financing company out in America. I don't know what this license is worth, but I think they're doing 29 million in sales out in the US, and they've got this license. Which is worth, but in my mind, I've counted it as worth nothing. And as long as they get rid of that American business, the UK loans business is probably going to be making somewhere in the region of £15 million next year. With that, FlexiPay is probably going to be losing a little bit of money. But I sort of see, you know, I think she's done the right thing. Lisa Jacobs has taken over from the guy Desire, who's one of three guys that started the business. And I think they were very good on machine learning. Yeah. And how to do all the data. I'm not sure they were great businessmen as far as, you know, making money is concerned. And they're expanding in the US, and they're not going to be making money in the US. It's far better to pull back to the UK, end this business out in the US, and then concentrate on the UK. So they're going to go in, if they get rid of the US business, they're probably going to be making, I don't know, on the loan side, 15 million maybe a year, maybe more, and just get the FlexiPay to break even. And they've got 60% of the market cap in net unencumbered cash. So they could give 50p back to investors. You know, just take a chunk of that and probably give 50p back to investors, 40 pence, 50 pence. It just makes them look so cheap. I mean, is it Deutsche Bank?
Deutsche Bank,
250p target that Deutsche Bank brought on them. I'd got them and I thought people were questioning me, oh, what about the money? Is that their cash? Can they give it away? Is it free? Or is it like a ring fence for something? But it isn't. I got in touch with the EFD there and it isn't. And I think, you know, if they gave that sort of amount of money back, it would be, you know, just 250p sounds plausible. I don't know what the SBA license is worth out in the US, but it could be worth quite a lot to another finance company out there. And they're in discussions. It sounds like it's going well. They said just last week, discussions are going well, so they get shot of that. It'll be really interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think you're right. You have to work out the sort of some of the parts, but just running from what you've just said, if a UK business can do 15 million of profit, and presumably there's a lot of losses so they won't have to pay tax, use a modest 12 times multiple, which I think is the poster child out of the same multiple for a lending club out in the state. So that is the best part of 180 million. You add the cash of 170, you get 350. Let's just chuck in US business 50 million. You get 400 million of EV compared to a 290 currently. And it's 400 million divided by 330 million shares. I mean, you get basically, that's £1.40 with anybody's money, and it's only trading at, what, 80p. So you could see how if you get a better UK result, particularly, then you, other than 15, you get even a lot more. So, I'm with you.
I sort of say to myself, it's cheap. I don't know how cheap it is, but it's cheap. Yeah. You know, I can't calculate how much this is worth, but I think it's probably worth a lot more than it is today. So, and that's all I need to know at the moment. It's doubled for me nearly, so...
I agree.
First ones I bought anyway, so, and I think, you know, I'll double a lot more there yet. So, again, it's another oh boy,
I would agree. I would agree. Just on that same theme, we've got another question from John Chinnery. He's asking about TP ICAP. I don't know if you've had a look at this. It's another one which has done pretty well. I know Christopher Mills of Harwood Capital owns it, and they've got basically a division called Parameta, which does the data business. I mean, TP ICAP, just for everybody's understanding, is the world's biggest interdealer broker. It helps institutions move sort of larger trades and trade off-market OTC products. So that is its bread and butter, but it's also got a big data gathering business. And this, to my understanding, I think Parameta's worth the whole market cap of the business. I don't know if you've ever had a look at this one, Richard.
No, I know a couple of people have held it and they've always said to me, why is it so cheap? I did take a brief look, but in all honesty, it's not the sort of stock I normally do. You know, I'm in funding circle because it's pretty sweet and pretty easy. You know, they're not providing the finance. They're getting other people to finance. And they're an intermediary. They're dealing with small businesses. It's a really sort of like pretty simple business to understand, really.
Yeah.
A lot of these financial companies, they get a little bit complicated down the line, and I can never really say to myself I fully understand them enough to be able to plough a lot of money into them. But I know a lot of people have said to me TP ICAP looks cheap. I've looked at it and thought it's cheap. The chart never really sort of excites me. Though. It hasn't got no vum behind it to actually sort of say to me that's going to double in a year. And like that's what I look for.
Yeah, you're an Arsenal supporter. I could tell that was the terrier of Henry, wasn't it?
Yeah. Okay. Fact, he was at Mello.
What, Terry Henry?
In November, David Streeter's daughter gave me a call back and said, half hour after I'd gone, she bumped into Thierry Henry in the hotel there. So I was absolutely gutted. Absolutely gutted.
Because you were presenting there.
I took all the clothes off and let him sign me all over if I'd been there.
Because you were presenting then as well, weren't you, in November?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, with Andy. Yeah.
Oh, well. Yeah, we've got another follow-up from Crypto Toad. He basically says, does Richard subscribe to any investment services or letters to help him with his investing? I probably know the answer, but what is the true result?
I do subscribe to Small Company Share Watch.
That's the one I do. Why is that?
Well, I've followed it for quite a lot of time, and you know, there's a few things I'm probably not keen on about the newsletter, and you know, sort of the way he prices his portfolio and everything. He always gets an opportune moment, so it doesn't cover the spread and stuff like that. But he does find a few, you know, real good ones in there. You know, recovery plays now and again. I like it when he finds an old one that's a recovery. I'm not too keen on the actual new things that come to the market, but he's quite well enlightened. He talks to the directors and gets in there, and there's often a bit of info in there that I find that I didn't even know about my own company. So I find him, I would say you've got to be careful. You've got to pick judiciously and do your own research anyway on anything that's in there. But he comes up with a few, he comes up with enough in a year to make it worthwhile investing in it. So, the information that's in there basically on companies that I might already hold or recovery plays that I like. And, you know, I might go for the odd new float, but they're rare. I don't really get into them a lot. So, okay. That'd be the one.
I might have a look myself. Okay, let's move in the financials. We've got one of the asset managers, Lion Trust. And I think most of them have been really beaten up over the last 3 years as equity prices have decreased, which has meant their fees that they get, which is a percentage of the assets under management, effectively stay the same. But because assets under management shrink, then their income shrinks. They make good margins, but the shares have started to increase. They're a bit of a beta play on the markets. What's your sort of latest on this one? They're still very cheap. I think they pay, last time I looked, they pay a 9% dividend yield and only trade on 11 times PE, even after the sort of, you know, the rally we've had.
Yeah, well, I bought them on because they formed a bowl on the chart. That was the only reason I bought them. I follow the charts with bowls. Mm. And that formed a terrific bowl on the chart, as you can see there. It's less exaggerated on that than the charts I use. But you can see it's making like a perfect curve. Mm. And with all these things, when markets bottom, all these trusts, the discount starts to go and, you know, it works its way towards neutral or premium even. So you get like a double whammy on any bounce in the market. And I bought it. Yeah, you can see the bowl on there now. Look better. Yeah. And I bought it purely for that bowl in the chart and the fact that it's got a yield that's so high. They look like they can possibly, you know, keep that yield and it won't get reduced. And it just looks like, you know, they're stuck in a lot of nice little small AIM companies, which the directors were buying at the beginning of the year as well. A couple of directors bought, two directors bought about 40 or 50 grand's worth each. And so that was, you could probably pick, you know, end of stocks in, you know, asset management and find a similar type of thing to that. But just, this looks like the best of the lot. So I just bought the bowl purely on that basis that the bowl looked good and sit there. And I haven't bought that many of them, to be honest.
Yeah. How reliable is this bowl sort of like, you know, chart sort of stuff in terms of, you know, sort of success rates? I mean, obviously you use it, so it must be worth it. But it just is in terms of how do you find the reliability of it?
So around 75%. It's got a 75% reliability rate. Okay. And basically, you could probably go back to CMC Markets and have a look at that one if you like and see what that looks. Go back on a 2 or 3 year chart. And I've often bought them and I know nothing about the company, but the chart just actually sings, you know, that there's something going on there. And that's what I did with CMC Markets, and that proved, you know, that paid out straight away. Sometimes the longer term ones are the better ones, to be honest. Yeah. If you've got a chart over a year or two that's made that sort of curve, or it's made it over the last 12 months, that's far more reliable than you get one of these little short term ones. A little tiny short term bowl on the chart will often mean, you know, it's just a little bit of short term news that's caused someone to buy it. Or they're suddenly they're in some big talks or something like that. So, but you can never tell which is which. You can't discriminate between them. So the little short term, I think, what was one? Keyword Studios recently, that had a little bowl on the chart. I ignored it. Bang, up, you know, they're in big talks. And straight away up like 60% or so. And I sat there and thought, you know, that's one I ignored. I should have ignored it, but I did. And
yeah.
You know, it cost me.
I
didn't buy it. So
it didn't cost you anything, Richard.
No. Well,
your technique. Yeah, yeah. But that's a really. Investment. I mean, it's like the highlight. Put that into context to investors. 75% reliability is fabulous. Is absolutely leading edge. So I mean, if you know, the more bowls, the better. There. Give.
And I'll tell you something as well. You see a lot more of them at the bottom of the market when a market's bottoming. You see a load of charts starting to do, which I think is probably indicative of people in the know buying into the company. You know, you've had traders buying in, selling out, just trading on the way down and making a little bit, scalping a little bit. And then something happens, you know, word gets around or something's going on and suddenly you see the chart start to change. And that's a powerful signal. You know, I can buy a share without knowing. You could even not tell me the ticker. If I could buy it without knowing the ticker, I could. And I would be pretty confident that chart 75% of the time will come good, better than any news that you think's going to happen. So it's often worth betting. If I see a chart doing that and everyone's negative, you know, they're saying this is going to the wall or whatever, and you see a chart, you know, they're the ones that I like to buy, because very often you find there's a bit of a takeover bid or something like that coming along.
Yeah.
And that, you know, there's good news in there that nobody, and then that's when you get a big bounce when everybody's, you know, shorting it or ignoring it. So it's good. It's the best chart signal I see for charts for me, and I use it. If you get a recovery plan, you see that on a chart, then that's a really good signal for me.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to be banging out a stock screener or a bit of an AI algorithm, I think, looking for a bit of crockery and a bit of bowls, I think, going forward. Now,
when you find out how to do it, tell me, because I haven't worked it out yet. I sit there looking through charts night after night trying to find these things. And it works different on different timescales as well. Sometimes you see them on a 4-year, 5-year timescale, and you won't notice it if you're just looking at a 2-year. So you've got to go through it, you know, all these stocks, and you go through them 3 or 4 times, different timescales. So to actually find them, and like I say, it's a good indicator, in my opinion.
Yeah, good. Okay, we've had a question again, another one from Michael Evans. He says, Richard, you talked about Halfords in the past. What's your latest on this one? It seems to be in bargain territory. I don't know whether it's got a a bowl on this one, but it may be one which didn't was in that 25% if there was a bowl somewhere.
That's where I got clobbered there, and I got clobbered just into January, just there, that tiny little kick down after, yeah, a little bit. There's the big drop down, and then just into
right. Oh, just recently we're talking on.
Yeah, start of the year, just on 2000, beginning of start of the year, we had a little.
Yeah,
you can see that one, and that started to make a bowl, and I bought it in the morning, and it started taking off anyway before I'd even started to mention it on a bowl. And away it went. I don't know what was exciting the market, but a bit of volume went through as well, and I thought, oh, this is it. They're in for a bid here.
And there was a lot of bid talk, wasn't
there? And there was a couple of rumours in the press about a bid talk. I thought, this is going to be it. And it didn't materialise. And then they came out and put out another warning. So but it's gone all over the place. And at the moment there, it looks cheap. But I just wonder, is it the industry to be in at the moment with all this electric car stuff? I know that they're training a lot of their guys to be able to do electric cars. And they're going to houses with vans and sort of doing like a home service thing. I'm not altogether sure. The cycle side of things is probably burnt out. I think the big craze of that over COVID, that's starting to die back a bit. And Stapleton there, I think he's a good CEO. He's well into his cars, and he's a guy who's attached to the industry. But as far as a lot of retailers, I'm not totally keen on at the moment. I'm not sure it's going to be a great time for retailers if Labour does get in. I think they're probably going to be trying to tax people one way or another. They're taking money off people. People are going to have less cash in their pocket.
Yeah.
So I'm not totally convinced that any of the retail is a great place to be right at this moment in time.
Yeah. So I think that's on your bike there, Michael.
In all honesty, I haven't looked at it for a month or two, so there may be something I'm missing. But to be honest, I think Marks and Spencer's has been a good retailer that I've had, and Shoe Zone and Car Factory, but they're hard to find in amongst all the retailers. Yeah. There's so many, got so many pressures from various different, areas, and with wages going up, living wage, that hasn't helped any retailers. It's a good thing for the people who are getting the higher wage. Agree they should have an higher wage, but it's not been great for, I think Shoe Zone's probably feeling it a little bit at the moment with the living wage haven't gone up, and I think Car Factory probably would have done a lot better if they hadn't had that. I estimate that must have been about 6 or 7 million that cost them to raise the living wage, which is a big chunk of their profits. So, that's got to all filter through. I think you've got to annualise those wage rises before you're going to, see good things from retailers on a year-on-year basis.
Good sound. We've got another question from Steve Lewis. He's asking about, I don't know if you ever looked at it, he's probably asking us both, I suppose, but it's RBG Holdings, which it's been a bit of a dog of a stock looking at the chart. I think it's one of those legal companies that was bought by a sort of like, had a CEO who bought a couple of divisions that went wrong.
I basically did look at this when I actually got it mixed up with Revolution Beauty. So, because they've got a similar ticker, I think one's RGB in it and the other one's RBG, yeah, RBG P. and RBGP. I did look at it, but again, it's not a company that I would normally, I like simple, retailers, engineers, manufacturing companies, Funding Circle is probably a step out of my normal range, but it just looked that cheap. But I it's not a stock that I've actually looked at, so I couldn't give an answer on that. You might know more about it, Paul.
No, I mean, I've looked at it in the past, and it's been one of those. With a legal company, a legal services company, it depends a lot on the actual people. And if it's ever sort of like, bought out, then for the acquirer it's all sort of how does the actual IP, the real USPs of the company, walk out the door. And what that means is that puts a cap on the multiple that they're prepared to pay given the risk associated with that happening with the partners. So I would just look at it. It isn't something I'm service businesses are, for people services business, it isn't something I particularly go for, because I like scalable, high gross margin, GARP type stocks rather than sort of like this is a people business that requires more offices, more people to scale?
I've been involved in architect company in the past. I'm trying to think what it was. Went Orchid. It was SMC, I think they were called. They're a Scottish guy that was McCall, his name was, that used to run that, and that was a buy to build. But it was all about services, you know, like they were architects and they bought an architect company because you give them retaining shares to keep them in there. And that lasts for a couple of years. And then when they decide to go, they go, and then they're your next competitor. So I agree with you say it's difficult when you've got a lot of staff and you're relying on staff. You can't multiply those staff very easily you can a piece of software.
Yeah, a bit of it.
And
anyway, we've had a quick reply back from Michael Evans on your retail. He says, thanks, Richard. He's got a similar sort of thoughts to the sector, other than he quite likes the Greg sausage roll, apparently. So,
I've always liked Greg's. yeah, you wouldn't believe it looking at me that I'm a Greg's lover.
No, but, exactly. Slim Jim.
Yeah, good company there. I noticed Roger Whiteside, he's just left the car factory. He was the guy that got Greg's really rattling away there. So I don't know if he's still a non-exec on Greg's, but I looked at their chart's doing quite well, but the growth there doesn't look, you know, at the moment, unless they come up, Greg's needs something sort of they need something, a game changer there. Now, you know, they open a few stores here and there isn't going to make them a high growth company. You really need to sort of It wants something else, expanding the US if they can, but that doesn't really work. It's not a great idea to do, and I don't think that would be attractive to shareholders. But so it's really going to be a booster there again, I think the sponge has been squeezed there.
The roll has been eaten. Okay, let's change sectors, pivot to the chemicals. We've got Syntoma, which has been a darling during the pandemic because basically is a basic chemicals business, which is going up market into specialization. It did really well during the pandemic because it sold those, I think it was the latex and rubber gloves into the healthcare sector, you know, the PPE, I think it was called, protection equipment, et cetera, and did really, really well. The shares got blasted. I think they probably did a couple of extra acquisitions and they need now to reduce their debt, their gearing. What's your sort of your latest on this one? Because there is a massive and distinguishable bowl on this one, as we could all see.
And also, what actually happened was, because they were doing all the gloves during COVID, that was a big boost for them. But the CEO left I think it was just before COVID, and he bought an adhesives company. And the business wasn't running very well anyway. And suddenly they got into adhesives, and it was somewhere where they hadn't been. It was like a swan song from this guy, CEO, I'm leaving. And he bought this huge company, and then he said, right, I'm off. And they were lumbered with it. And so they had that on top of it. But they bought this guy in, Michael Willow, and he's been through the industry. I'm trying to think what the other business is, but he's got a good reputation anyway. And I've watched the result presentations, and he's all over the detail. You know, when you watch some of these webcasts, I see the CEO there, and he's, you know, when it comes to a few numbers, he has to go off to the CFO to get this, that, and the other. And when someone asks him a difficult question, I like people to actually come back and say, you know, he made a promise. He said, you know, we're going to get all six of these divisions. It was the Eastman acquisition they got. I think four of the six are now sorted as far as restructuring goes. He did say that he'd have all six done by the end of, I think it was by either the end of June or the beginning of June. Mm. And he held his hands up. He said, yeah, you know, I did say we'd do six, but we've only got four. There's been more issues there than I thought. Blah, blah, you know. But he's straight, completely straight and honest. And you could tell he knows the detail, he knows the inside of the business, and he looks like the real deal to me. So they did have a point about a year ago when things looked like the market looked like it was firming again, and I think people got a little bit overexcited and they started just to buy it, and then off it fell. And at this actual last presentation, he said that they're not going to do hope. When things have changed, they're going to say things have changed, and they'll wait till they're sure before they actually say it. So at this actual presentation, they said the last 2 months have seen an improvement, but it's too early to say that it's a trend. And I think it probably is a trend. You know, you feel in the market things are picking up. And if all industries are sort of like picking up, then I think probably the chemicals industry is picking up as well. And listening to them, they said that even if there's no, trying to think what the phrase was, but there's a phrase in their last statement that says, even if there is no
destocking, restocking.
Yeah. It basically finished off at the end of it saying that, you know, like, no matter what, even if there isn't an improvement in the market, we will see an improvement in their earnings per share. In other words, you know, they've tidied up the business enough to see an improvement just at the same level of what they were trading. So there were some positive statements in there that I liked. I like this guy, and he's been buying shares. The finance director's been buying shares. But I think they're trading at about half book. If you have a look on Stockopedia, it seems to have them down as trading at half book value.
Yeah, it's half of sales. You're right, half of sales. Yeah.
So I think at the end of the day, if they turn around and say that things are improved and they're doing better than expected, that's going to move ever so quick. Mm. You know, so that's going to put in a huge bounce very quick if that's the case. And you've already witnessed it, you know, when they just, on the last set of our last trading update, they're just a little bit more positive. And the shares went up like 30-40% in a day or two. Surprised me, to be honest. And I didn't buy until they'd already gone up about 30-40%. And I thought to myself, do I want to be doing this here? But, you know, it's got that cracking bowl on the chart. Mm. You know, and if the next trading update's in July, so I think Willow definitely looks like the real deal to me.
Yeah.
You know, that's the great thing about these webcasts. Since COVID, you can sit there and you can watch them on a webcast and you actually see the whites of their eyes and you can see people question them. And at the end, there was a guy from, I think it was JP Morgan, or one of them questioning him on the phone about what they could actually do. And they were sort of laughing as much as to say, you know, he sussed it out. You know, he knows what we could be doing. And they were trying to play, it looked like they were trying to play it down a bit. So, you know, no guarantees there at all. But I think that's probably one where, hopefully. You know, so,
I hope it is a cracking bowl rather than a bowl that's cracked. But
exactly, yeah, you do. For every 3 cracking bowls, you get a bowl that's cracked.
Yeah, basically. But I'm with you, actually. I mean, the maths works, because if they do manage, if he sort of like moves them up into specialty chemicals, they should be able to do, I'm just going to drop a figure out of the air, but 10% EBIT margins for specialty chemicals wouldn't be too much out of the ordinary. On 2 billion of turnover, that's an EBIT of 200 million. Even on a modest 10 times EBIT, you know, because it's a GDP plus type of grower, that's basically a 2 billion market cap. 2 billion enterprise value compared to 1 billion currently. That's a double, that is. That's exactly what you just said, i.e., you know, 100% upside in 12 months.
And they have chopped out so much costs. He's done is chop out costs everywhere they can find places to chop costs out. So when sales do pick up, the operating margins are going to, you know, increase far better. And, you know, that's just...
Yeah.
It looks like one to buy at this point in the market. You know, if we see a pickup over the next year or two, you know, I'm watching the shipping indexes. That's going up and up. The price of shipping containers. Well, people are buying for Christmas again. You know, a lot of these retailers are getting stock in for Christmas. All that is sucking out inventory that, you know, has been sat over there in China waiting to be moved, and the whole shipping side of it's picking up. And it's not because of COVID, and it's not because of Ukraine, and it's not because of, you know, the Red Sea this time, the fourth time it's happening. There's not a lot going on, but the shipping prices are picking up, so something's driving that. So
I think you're right, actually. I think since the start of the year, just macro-wise, the UK and Europe has actually surprised to the upside in terms of the economics. The economy's got better, whereas the US started off like a train and has sort of plateaued. But I think you're right. We're getting a much stronger global GDP growth than we expected 6 months ago. Hence, we haven't got as many interest rate cuts being built in.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I was quite surprised that, you know, you watch the US and they, you know, people say, oh, you know, we're not going to get an interest rate cut. sit there and look at them, I think, you know, if he was left with interest rates at this level, and they're growing at the pace they're growing at the moment, that's not a bad 6 months ahead if it just stayed like that. You know, businesses are doing great, the stock market's roaring away, interest rates are at 6%, which is probably near a more normal level than 0% was ever at. So you've got to expect that, you know, we're not going back down to those levels ever again, I don't think, on interest rates. And, you know, in real times, what are normal rates? I don't know. I've seen rates up to 18%.
Yes, so have I.
You know, back in the 80s when Norman Tebbit was saying, get on your bike, interest rates were right up there then. And, you know, you've got to say to yourself, what is a normal rate? And I think people might just be expecting a bit too much as far as rate cuts go. You know, if they're expecting rate cuts to carry on coming down, I don't think they're going to come down that much, because the rate growth's going to pick up. It's going to prevent that, I think. And we're going to sort of find a new norm of around, I think, probably, you know, percentage point or so below where we are. I don't think they're going to get a lot lower than that.
Yeah, now the markets are suggesting we've got a neutral interest rate in the UK of about just under 4%, which actually is not dissimilar to the pre-financial crisis level of about sort of 4 to 5%. But I'm with you. Back in, I think it was 1991-92 when we came out the ERM, it was up to I was trying to buy a house and the interest rate was up to 12%, and I was thinking, what's all this about? It's terrible.
Norman Lamont trying to put up 2.5% in an hour, I think. That's not going to work, and it straight away reversed it within about half an hour. So that was under Norman Major, wasn't it? John Major. So they're all the same, you know. They're all blagging it through. They're all charlatans. Yeah, a lot of them. It's just a matter of, you know, getting away with what you can say to people and who believes it. So,
I've got a quick question. I just wanted to answer. We've got from Adrian Demade. He's basically just asked about taking stock and Graham Nairy. And great, just let him know Graham Nairy will be coming back onto the exchange. But I think the taking stock program is currently on hold for Vox. But just that's a quick update. Right, let's move to another industrial stock, which has been a rocket ship, Zote Foams. And this one is basically specialist foams. It sells largely into the automotive aerospace sector, but its biggest customer is Nike in for its Air Jordan sort of trainers. And it's got this fully recyclable cap cylinder, etc. Just to put it in perspective, it makes EBIT margins of about 12%, but it's carrying a lot of losses, obviously, from the resource thing, which does chime then with the Syntoma 10%. But anyway, Zote Foams, what's your latest on this one? Because it really has taken off over the last few months.
I've followed these for years because they're just an industrial, you know, foam maker. But what they actually do is they make a lot of their foam with nitrogen. And they've got patented technology for doing a lot of this foam. I think you can put smaller bubbles into the foam, from how I understand it, very fine bubbles. And you can control the spongeability, or whatever the technical term is, for how thick and how springy foams are. So actually, I bought a sheet of their foam about 3 months ago. I wanted some foam for a bit of stuff I was doing, and it came from what I thought was going to be a piece of spongy foam. It's like wood, this foam. It is absolutely solid. You put it against the wall and you drive a lorry into it, and it would protect the wall from any sort of scrapes or the paint, because this foam is so strong, but it gives. And it's got like a real, it's like honeycomb, but it's a real memory stuff. Anyway, 120 quid a sheet this was, and it was about a meter square come through, and it weren't what I wanted. It was completely wrong. So I've got this sheet of their foam sat in the house. But they do, I think, probably about 10, might be even 20 odd different products. But the real game changer here is that people have been making these milk cartons. And in order to make a milk carton waterproof, you've got to have a layer of either cardboard on the outside and plastic inside, or you have like a foil inside. And it becomes very difficult to recycle that because it's two products stuck together. They've come up with a method of making it all plastic, but it's very light. It's got these bubbles in it, so it's light enough to, you know, cut around, and it's fully recyclable. So where everyone's been trying to get two products and make them pretty plastic-free as much as they can, These have got one which is just plastic, but it's recyclable. And it's actually better than doing two products and trying to split them apart to recycle them. And a huge, huge company that does milk cartons and drink cartons has actually taken this, and they're going to start patent. Well, it's patented. It's going to be start. They're going to decide. They're making the amount up how they're going to make their money out of this at the moment. There's a deal between the packaging company, but I think they're going to license it around the world or something. So they're not even probably going to have to make this stuff. They've just got the patent on it, and they're just going to take in the royalties in all likelihood. And it's going to be a game changer. And it's a massive, massive, you know, sector to be in for them straight away. And it's got other uses as well. Like you stick it in the microwave and you can eat a carton of soup up, because it's not affected. It hasn't got the foil in it like others have got. So the foil doesn't get hot and it doesn't all disform. So you better stick it in the microwave. Oil penetrates these older cartons. So you can't put oil in these milk cartons. After a few days, they start to seep out, but this would be out of old oil as well. So, nice. Got massive applications, could be a real game changer. And I think the
how did you actually? One thing about the resource is, which I always find quite difficult about these sort of like new technologies, is what else is happening in the world, because sort of like fully 100% recyclable cartons isn't a concept which is new. So you'd have thought lots of packaging companies have been trying to develop this. And I know we haven't really got there yet. It doesn't seem to be. But it's sort of like, how do you build that into your investment thesis that other people are probably doing this as well, but obviously not using their patents?
I know. That's the one problem. When you buy one of these companies that have got a technology, it's only as good until someone comes along and says, we've got something better, you haven't even heard about. And that's why I always shy away from technology companies, because I've got this Betamax tape here, and I've invented a Betamax tape. It's the greatest thing in the world. And someone comes along with VHS, which isn't as good, but it's more efficient in certain ways, and they market it better, and you're the loser. So competition is the thing that you start to research, to know who's behind the scenes is making something that's even better. But obviously the packaging company they're dealing with is a big company, and they've taken it and they believe in it. So it's at that point, I think it's pretty proven that they've got the best thing in the industry, if that's the case. So you go along with it as far as you go along with it, until someone comes out and says they've got something better, and it's like to compete, but I've not been able to find anything around that's like that. Everyone's been going in a different direction, trying to make two-layer cartons, as far as I can see. And I think the ones that have done plastic, I think the things are quite heavy and bulky and not that good for recycling. But this is the one, by the look of it, if they've actually got into market. So.
We've had a question from John Shinnery again. He's basically on Zoat Foams. He's saying, given obviously the share price has increased, and I was just looking at the PE, it's just over 24 times. Is there a risk of FOMO on this one?
Well, I think,
but you get sucked into this thing.
Yeah, there probably is a bit of FOMO in it that people will get sucked into. It's often the case, but I think the actual underlying business that's aside from resources, they're saying that the trading's stronger there as well. And this does tend to, I think, Zoat Foams does tend to trade on a pretty decent PE rating without the resource. Yeah. In the past, I've seen them trading on a PE of around 20, I think, and it's been on quite high PE without this type of thing. So, once you've got the Nike bit in there as well, and it's starting to become stocks get loved, don't they? Certain stocks get loved. And I notice when you get a market bottom, you can often find a stock in the past. There's a certain bunch of stocks that all bounce at the bottom, no matter whether they're doing badly or they're doing well. Investors that have sold out want to go back in again and buy them. And I think probably Zoat Foams is another one where people have been in there in the past and they want to be back in there again on that basis as well. So, I think the existing business aside from resources is doing quite well, and I think that's capable of generating a decent PE. You've got to be in it to win it at the moment on this one. When they come out and say we've licensed it and it could mean this, then you got to have some in it. I wouldn't say I've got a big holding. I've got a decent size holding in it, but I wouldn't say it's not one that would devastate me. I can't see the shares actually coming off a lot. I can see them sort of like peaking or just sideways, and if they did anything rather than fall. So yeah, I feel okay. pretty safe in a pretty free room.
Okay, well, let's move on to segue out to consumer beauty. Let's go to a real sort of terrific stock, Warpaint, which actually, I suppose, it chimes with your comments earlier on Revolution Beauty. We'd have a look at it. But this one, is the stock chart has done brilliantly. They're a challenger cosmetics brand, which has been going success in the UK, but branching out internationally in Europe, the US, and in Asia. But it's been a rocket ship, hasn't it? And I think actually some of the directors, the original founders, have just sold a shedload of money as well.
Yeah, well, they've, I think they're growing earnings at about 50% per annum, you know, on a normalised basis for the last 2 or 3 years. And I think that's going to continue. You know, they've had a latest trading update, which was ahead of expectations. They said they're ahead and brokers boosted their earnings a little bit more. But the further you get into the year, I think the further they'll you know, boost their guidance. And basically, yeah, the directors did sell some shares, quite a chunky up, but they're left with still a lot of shares themselves. And I say good companies, when you see good companies, good directors sell shares before good news, not before bad news. And, you know, if they had sold shares when they just did a little while back and it was ahead of bad news, they've got 20%. I think they've still got something like a 20% stake in each of the two main directors. And they'll be stuck with those. You know, no one's going to ever say to them, next time you want to sell shares, we'll take them off you. Because, you know, you just sold a load of shares just before bad news. So I actually think it's, you know, what they've actually done now is sell before some good news. And they will have a trading update on the 13th. I think they're doing a presentation as well on the 13th. They announced today. And it's a great company. It just mimics a lot of the big brands, like, you know, because you're worth it and all that stuff, you know.
So just on that, Richard, what is their USP, their secret sauce? Why do they, is it the brand? I mean, and obviously the brand is attractive, but it just is sort of like they're doing so much better than others, like, you know, I mean, obviously a Revolution Beauty has struggled, but some of the major brands have been struggling as well. You know, Alida Gibbs, and you know, there's a bunch of others as also which are not doing so well.
It's three things, really. They've got quality. You know, the quality of the product is good. The price of it is a fraction of what the mimic that it might be. You know, there'll be like an eyeliner that the girls are buying, and it'll be, you know, 15 quid, and theirs will be a fiver. So there'll be a huge difference in the price, but little difference in the product. So you've got the quality, you've got the price. But also, they don't manufacture for themselves. They outsource their manufacturing. So the RGB, do they do their own manufacturing? I think they do. Do they?
Yeah, it's a bit of both, I think.
Yeah, I think Warpaint outsource all that, and they've got several suppliers, so they can switch from supplier to supplier as and when they need. So, and also, it's run by these two guys that have been doing it from a market store at the start, and they've carried on growing. And they said that the second half is going to be very strong. You know, they've built up a big stock inventory because they're going out to America. They've just got into
Walmart, haven't they?
Yeah, so they've got into Walmart. So that has the scope to scale up big out there on its own. Mm. And they've gone on exchange, put the shares on exchange out in the US, where US investors can invest in them. It's all there, like, you know, come and get me, big boy. You know, it's like, we're here now. We're in the US. We're waiting for one of you big US companies to come along and just take us out. And it's just making a noise, you know, making a nuisance of themselves, parking their tank on L'Oreal's drive, so to speak, in a reverse form, really, because L'Oreal was the tank. But, you know, just saying we're here and we're gonna keep nipping away at you until one of these companies buy them, I reckon. But great growth, and you're still buying growth at a decent price here. I think, you know, when you start looking on a peg, if you're getting 50% earnings growth a year and you're on a PE of 20 odd, you're a peg that's well below one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, it's hard. Yeah, no, I would agree. I mean, it's a bit like Eddie Murphy, isn't it? Coming to America, I think they've got their next stage of growth. That's what they need to do with the Gregsy's sausage rolls, coming to America.
Yes.
Okay, well, let's pivot to back to sort of engineering. We've got MPAC, and I know you've talked about it before. It's a high speed, you know, sort of a packaging machine supplier, automation supplier, traditionally into the food and beverage and the pharma sectors, about 80%. But it's increasingly now moving into clean energy, into batteries. It's got sort of partners like Freya in Norway and Ilika as well. Mm-hmm. And it came out with some quite big news just recently that it just had a successful installation of its packaging machinery and automation machinery in Freya's sort of like qualification plant out in Norway. So do you want to take us through your latest views on this? Because it's been another rocket ship for you, hasn't it?
Yeah, and also Adam Holland, he comes across as, again, watching his webcasts, you know, and just watching his behaviour and the way he talks, yeah. He comes across as a very clever guy, knows what he's doing, he's got a plan. You know, they're going to start spreading, they get quite lumpy earnings. So it's one of those things where, you know, it's hard to control when you're a small business and you're dealing with just a number of clients. Then yeah. Those clients are ordering at all sort of lumpy times and you just have to accept that that's the way it's going to go. So they're looking for new clients. Watching the last webcast, he was trying to contain himself by not saying the companies that they've just signed as customers. And I think they've picked up some decent customers recently. But the thing is that this battery, the battery line, none of that's priced into the forecast. That is completely out. And they've just got this bit where they've managed to actually put together a automated production of one of these battery cells. And now they've just got to speed, get it on down a production line, get it running through the production line and speed it up. So they've got to hit some other key milestones. I don't know whether they get paid anything for it in this recent milestone. What do you reckon?
I would have thought so myself. I think that they're one of a number of sort of like third party engineering to put in this whole sort of facility, this whole gigafactory sort of like, you know, mock up. And I think they've largely done their part and it's the other people to do theirs.
Yeah. So I assume they've probably got hit a milestone of some sort and they'll get a milestone payment perhaps. But none of that's in their forecasts, I suppose it hasn't been mentioned until they get to the results, but we'll see. But basically, once they get that going, you know, they're world leading in production of battery production, which is fabulous to have automated battery production. And you sort of think they're out in the US as well. There's got to be some companies in the US that will be interested once they've got one of these lines running. And this is all on top of what they're doing elsewhere. And the earnings growth there is really good. I think he's talking about an extra 10% on sales and 10% on margin. So he's looking at about 20% growth a year. And I think they want to double the sales within 5 years. So they've got growth ambitions there, which is good. One of the things I did notice, I was watching the Greencore presentation. And they were talking about, you know, they're getting rid of one of their factories and they're going more into automation. And they were saying that since the living wage increased by £1.10, it's made automation far more attractive than it was before. Yeah. Because, like having staff there, and suddenly you've got to pay another £2,000 a year per staff member or more by the time you paid their national insurance and their tax. So over £2,000 a year it's going to cost you extra for every staff member. Suddenly a production line with 40 people on it suddenly looks a good cost saving to get rid of those 40 people and put an automated line in where it didn't before. That must be affecting a lot of companies now, you know, onshoring, when it comes to onshoring, and say to themselves that is it worth automating this line now? And it's becoming more cost effective to do it. So I think he's in the right spot as well for being able to do automation for other businesses. So yeah. I find that attractive. They've got a trading update in July. And they'll say that earnings are going to be weighted to the second half, which might probably, that might scare a few people. But I'd say go and have a look back at last year. And they said that last year as well, and they did fantastically. And it is the thing with the company, it's what earnings are weighted to the second half. But although they're saying earnings are weighted to the second half, if the first half's a lot better than last year, you can think to yourself, well, they're as good as their word. Yeah. You know, I think, new CEO, he's been in there about a year. And I think he's the real deal. So
Yeah, they haven't put a foot wrong, and even after the recent rise, they're only trading at sort of like 13 times PE, just over. So, I'm with you.
He's got a degree in physics as well. He comes from Rolls Royce, JCB, and it isn't like today it is physics when you're actually doing this, because these things have to shoot down a production line. Mm. I talked about it the other day, 160 of them in a minute, boxing, picking stuff up, putting it in a box, and doing 160 a minute, going shooting down a line. That's speed. If a company's got, you can save a hell of a lot of money if you've got a machine that can send stuff down the line that quick and package it all and do a lot, even wrap it at the end of it and put it on a pallet. The cost savings are there for companies that want to invest.
Yeah.
They've just got to invest.
No, it'll be huge savings. Okay, well, you mentioned Greencore with the sandwich and deli maker, et cetera, which supplies sort of supermarkets and coffee shops and, convenience stores with sort of like, quick food, et cetera. What's your study late on this one? Because all these charts I'll show you, I'm showing everybody, it starts at the bottom left and goes up to the top right. It's terrific.
Great way of making money if you buy charts like that.
Yeah, I know.
So I got in at about £1.20 actually. I'm in from about £1.20, and I actually bought that because I saw the charts starting to roll up. But they've got a new guy in there, Dalton Phillips, who came from DAA out in Ireland.
Yeah.
And he's been in the food industry all this time. And there's a private investment company. They haven't got a big stake, but they're agitating for things to be done. And I think he's actually doing, I don't know what they're agitating for, because I actually think he's doing the right thing. They've just upgraded their earnings forecast by 5%. Let me just see. There's another one here where if you look at trading 12 months, the earnings on a trading 12 months basis, see that can't find it at the moment, but I think they're saying like 12 pence earnings on a trading 12 months. The forecast of something like 10, just over 10 pence this year, is it? I think.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's what I've got. Yeah.
So they've already done 12. They've already done 12 on a trading 12 months. The bulk of their earnings come in the second half. Mm. And I think they're going to beat by some way. They're going to do more than 12 pence. And Director bought 30,000 shares 2 days ago just on the dip, when the shares just came off for a little bit. That's the first sort of little dip they've had. And the director's been in and bought 30,000 shares. They've got rid of a factory up in the Midlands near you somewhere. Mm. And they've got, it's a soup factory, closed the soup factory, and it's going to now start making food for Aldi.
Yeah.
So it's a whole factory. So this soup factory hasn't been making money. So rather than actually have to close the factory and take all the losses on getting rid of the factory and everything, they've just turned it from soup to like quiche or whatever it is that they're making for Aldi and stuff. And they said it is materially, very materially
earnings accretive.
For them. So that's a big move as well. They've got a factory that just does make sandwiches for Marks and Spencer's. Marks and Spencer's are having a whale of a time. They're increasing the quality of their sandwiches and stuff like that. But people are spending a bit more on food. I think this month they're going to be, their like for like last month is going to be, with last year is going to be poor for the weather. They had a good June or a good June last year. So it'd be difficult. But I think they've had a good first 3 months of this second quarter. They've had a good first 2 months of this second quarter. They've had a good 2 months. June will be a difficult one to beat on last year, but once you get into the next quarter, they're pinging away, and they should have real good like for likes from then. So I think they're going to come out, and there's going to be some big upgrades. And I've noticed brokers keep coming out and saying, "Oh, our target's £1," and so I'm sort of thinking, "No, it's nonsense. Turn £1, it just makes me think you're just trying to knock the price of this share because you've got clients, and when the results come out, you'll probably all change your mind and you'll be saying buy it." So I've been there before, and I've bought a really decent stake in this, and I think the company is, the chart on its own has got that huge curve, and it's steepening, and it's just saying to me that I think they could do well past 12p. I think they've got the capability of doing more like 16p earnings this year. That's not nothing like that's on the cards, but we'll see.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I think that's sort of the tailwinds is that more and more people are buying stuff from supermarkets. They can just quickly reheat and stuff like that. Plus, you've got return to work and the office, which is increasing. It isn't massive, but it's definitely increasing. And then, as you rightly point out, if they can actually put in, automation, robotics, and packaging, and strip out a lot of cost from their facilities, then you're going to get a lot of bottom line operating leverage. And if they can put that, I was looking at their EBIT margins; they're about 4.5% currently. Well, if they do that on a sort of like a impulse type purchase, then there's no reason why they can't double that. Actually, it's probably the operating margin.
The guy running it now, Donald Phillips, he's been out in the island. He's got the CV for doing well. He's brought his, I think it's the CFO that they brought across recently. She was from there as well, so he's known her before. I like it when CEOs bring in a CFO they know. Unknown CFOs are a bit of a unknown quantity, and they, you can now come in and interview them, and they can say they did this well and that well, but they may have been the cause of the problem at a company in the past. If you've known someone, you can bring from from another business, like I think Marks and Spencer's poached Right Moves CFO. Did you see that? The chairman, one of the non-executives, has left Marks and Spencer's because he was the chairman of Right Move, and they, Marks and Spencer's poached their CFO or whatever. So, but in the industry, if you know someone that's good, pay the price. Get them and make sure you get them. And if you know them, and that's worth paying for. So
if it's a winning team, then that's what you need, isn't it? Really, it's a bit like Arsenal. You get Thierry Henry with a good big centre for it was a Frank Ricard or something. I can't remember the great striker that you had in there from Dutch from Holland.
Okay. Well, but Dennis Bergkamp,
Dennis Bergkamp, that's it, guy. Anyway, so, let's on that consumer side.
They've got a training update in the middle of next month, by the way.
Good. Well, watch out for that then. Okay, let's move to another one of the consumer. We've got IG Design, which another one has done recently. This is basically sort of Christmas and seasonal gifts and packaging and stuff like this for people. Obviously quite tight margins. I was just looking at EBIT margins. That's actually not too bad. They're 5% EBIT margins. What's sort of like the USP? What's sort of attracted you to this one? Because it's sort of like, it must compete against a lot of people.
Yeah, they're big for a start, they're out there. They're Walmart and everybody else as well out in America, and they do a lot. But I watched them I held them probably 10 years or so ago as well, and I've known them all the time. So you sort of know the business inside and out. And they had the boss there was Paul Feynman, and he sold all his shares. And then after selling his shares, the business just plunged, and it was like he obviously could see that they were, coming up for hard times. They've gone for a fair old tough time. They've got a new guy in there, Paul Bow, who's running the company now. And the board seem good, but they just haven't kept investors informed. They keep saying everyone's waiting for a trading statement that was updated from the same as last year, and no trading statement turned up. And you deep down in there, I'm thinking, when companies go quiet and they miss their trading statement and they don't do a trading statement the same day as last year, what don't they want to tell us, And you sort of get that in your mind. And all investors are like that. And so it's drifted and drifted down over the course of the last 6 months. And then suddenly they come out with a trading statement saying things were going absolutely fabulous, And I sat there and thought, I can't believe, they haven't told people this sooner that they've doubled in a month, haven't they? Yeah. Nearly, almost doubled in a month. Mm. And I think I woke up that morning when they put his trading statement out, and they were up 35%. Yeah. And I just thought, you've got to buy. So I bought when they're up 35% on the day at the open. They were literally, I paid 154 pence, I think, at the open on them, and I kept buying all that morning. And, they've got the £2 now, but when you actually look back, you've got a chart that you can look back at and the dilution and everything else. And they've got the scope to go a lot higher. They can increase their margins. They're talking about increasing their margins to 5% odd. And, they've done a lot of cost cuttings. And I think that actually the board is better than I thought the board was. I thought they got in, they didn't say much. And I watched them on a presentation on telly, on a webcast. I can't say I was overly impressed by the CFO. I was there and he seemed, well, but maybe, I underestimated him because he'd come out with some great numbers. The broker forecasts have been going, in the recent weeks, they've been creeping up and up. I think they've risen 20% since they come out with this trading statement. And it'll be interesting to see what they say in a couple of weeks' time when they've got their actual results out. I think they're probably going to get some big upgrades. And they do, wrapping for... I think they're one of the biggest wrapping companies in the world. They'd be a target for an American business of some sort, some conglomerate or something out there at some point. But in the meantime, I think dividends coming back there and the performance is just as good as I thought it was, although they hadn't told anybody. I was just put off like everybody else by a complete lack of news. Yeah. So they need to get their PR sorted out and tell people, keep people informed a bit more.
Yeah. No, I mean, you're right. I mean, to double in a month just because they hadn't put a trading update was perhaps a bit of an opportunity to correct going forward.
Exactly. Yeah, I know.
Okay.
So,
okay.
They present on Investor Meets Company and stuff like that, and you can get a good look at them there, and I'll be watching them on the results as well and see what they say.
Yeah.
But the way the brokers are moving them up, it looks like that's got further to run.
Yeah. Okay, we've got a final one in the consumer sector. It's sort of like got Luceco, which basically does sort of like wiring accessories and CV chargers, plugs, sockets, cable leads, extension leads. Also, there is LED lighting, etc. I think most of it, 60% of it, goes into sort of the repair, maintenance, installation market, so into homes and into sort of like commercial buildings, etc. What's surprising, actually? I thought it'd be highly competitive, but they've obviously got something right because the EBIT margins are about 11%, which is much higher than I thought it was. So they must have some sort of USP, I guess.
I think they're run by this guy, John Ormby, and sort of he didn't cover himself with glory when they first floated, because they literally floated and he sold about 12 million shares shortly after floating and then warned. And the things got hammered down to about 20 pence. The city just didn't want to know them.
Yeah.
And they got hammered down. He argued that he didn't know that he was going to have to put this warning out. Who knows? But since then, they've redeemed themselves quite a lot. And they did get up to, I think they got up to nearly £5 a share at one point. Mm. But they, like you say, they do LED, they do cabling. They've got about five different divisions of owners. But they've got the cash to go and do another acquisition as well. And they buy on really good... The stuff they buy goes on really good, low price, cheap acquisitions. He's good at buying companies and adding them to the company. And the trading statements recently have all been better than expected. They said they're doing better than expected. Brokers are increasing forecasts slightly, but I feel at a point now where they're about to say, actually, we can say now, we know we're going to be well ahead of forecasts. Things are picking up from China. The shipping indexes are showing that more stuff's coming out from China. Okay, it's putting up their shipping prices a bit, but it's for a good reason that shipping prices are going up, I think. Industrial over here is doing well. I think a lot of businesses over here are doing well. And what they actually said that I heard him say that he'd like to acquire would be a distributor in Europe. So if they could buy a distributor in Europe and distribute their stuff out into Europe, all their stuff's made out in China, but they've got their own factories out in China that they manage themselves. So it's not like outsourcing it; it's their pure factories in China that they've got. And I think they're looking at opening perhaps some in Vietnam or somewhere like that, so that they spread their risk a bit. But once this thing starts going, the operational gearing on here starts to kick in, and the earnings pick up pretty fast. Mm. And XP Power just had that's in bid talks again. So that's another one in the sector that's just been picked off probably. And when you have a look at it, these are far cheaper than XP Power as far as I can see it. They look, debt-wise and everything else, they just look a far better company that should command a much higher rating than they've got when you look at XP Power. So. But the chart again. You know, you've got a nice little bowl there that's starting to curve. You know, you want to see charts that are curving up. If it's not a bowl, you want to see the chart making a curve as momentum increases, rather than, you know, when you see the chart starting to roll over at the top, you know, momentum's falling. That chart there is starting to curve and momentum's increasing, and it's just recently broke through a technical level. So, again, they've got an update next month, and I reckon that'll be the one where, you know, people wake up to it. But
yeah, I mean, no about it. So the secular growth of moving towards electrification, then you know, they've got to be a winner. As I say, they must have something, because I've expected this to be quite a commodity area, but in reality, say their EBIT margins are 11%, or 10-11%, which is actually really good. So they've obviously got something there, that's for sure.
Also, they bought 9% in E-Energy just recently, EAAS.
Yeah.
So they took a 9% stake in it. Well, that company is a small... They go to a factory or school and wipe out all the old lights and put new LEDs in and battery chargers for... and solar panels and charges, so they do the complete contracts. Well, they've always been winning sort of like £1 million contracts all the time, but now they've got some cash in from the sale of the other half of their business that they sold off, and that's providing with the cash to go in and have the working capital to do a lot more bigger contracts. So they recently announced like a £5 million one, but I think they're going to be picking up a lot more larger contracts too, and I presume Luceco are going to be the source of the products for them when they actually fit them, that being that they've taken 9% and they've already got a big working relationship. I think this investment was just to give them a bit more working capital so they can go in and win a few more big contracts, so that could be good for Ormby too. And I dare say, if ever anything happened, Ormby might just go in and take someone like EAS out, and you know, have a little business there that does the actual fitting itself as well, which would be, you know, a bit different from their existing model, but it'd probably be profitable to do that. But like I say, he's a shrewd guy, this Ormby. I watch him, and he's been around the block a bit. So
yeah. Yeah, well, he's definitely well trained in there. That's for sure. Sorry about that. I've got a final question from Otman Salamat. He's asking Richard, what are your thoughts on Filtronic? Because he says you had a quick look at it last week, and have you got any early thoughts on it? It's been a rocket ship. It basically does. I think it's sort of radar and wireless sort of communications, but it's got this huge contract with Elon Musk's SpaceX, or it's basically low orbit satellite business that is a real game changer. And as you'll see from the chart, it really has moonshotted.
Well, I've bought into those. I bought in recently. What did I pay? I think I've bought in just on that little pullback where it went up, and I ignored it first of all. You know, I've known Filtronic for years and years.
Yes.
And they're always hot and cold. We've won, you know, we've got business, we've not got business. It's been, you know, dreadful as far as that is concerned, because they lost out after all the Nokia mobile phones, I think. Was it Nokia or Ericsson or something? I had a lot to do with aerials and antennae. So that is their main business. They're in three groups of business now. They've got the antennae, the mobile phones business, which I think is antennae and other stuff. And that's not fantastic margins, but then they've got defense, which they supply stuff to like Kinetic, who are, you know, for radar and whatever their chips are used for. But their technology is RF technology, like these RF tags that they stick on in stores to ID. Someone walks out of a shop with something and it bleeps off and, you know, identifies products in trailers, and they track them and everything else. That technology has sort of got pushed out by all other sorts of technology. But now these satellites are up there, these lower Earth orbit satellites, that RF technology works in a particular wave band that I think these satellites need to work and set up these constellations up in, you know, like 21 or 30 odd satellites in a constellation that work together to transmit for mobile phones and stuff. So that's where they've got in with Musk and his SpaceX. And that I've read a write-up, and they're absolutely thrilled with, you know, I think when they put out the update just recently, you know, they've named it SpaceX, and they're absolutely thrilled with the performance of the product and how well they've served SpaceX and everything. SpaceX have taken, they've got 10% in warrants.
Yeah.
So if Viltronic do well, SpaceX have got, they're going to get some money back in it from warrants. And that was on the agreement that they provided a certain amount of business for Viltronic. I think it was something like 25 million or something like that, that they have to provide. Mm. And when they, as long as they provide that, they get these warrants as well. So it guarantees the work for Viltronic so that they can increase their business to take that work, I suppose. But they're, you know, they've got a grant from out in Europe, from the Europeans, for satellites as well. This is the high margin stuff, you know. So where they've sort of batted along and might have had 10 or 15 million pounds of sales here or whatever, you suddenly get 25 million selling satellites, and it's probably worth 10 times what they were getting on mobile phones. So they're entering like a new area of higher margin business, and they've got a new board in there. They've got a new CEO and CFO. So you've got a new guy coming in at the right time when you want someone who's, you know, the old guys are probably there. We've been doing the antennas and get a bit long in the tooth, and you want fresh management in as well. So they've got that as well. So to me, I was looking at the earnings, and they lost money in the first half again, and what they're forecast to do in the second half, they're probably going to have a bit of a bumper second half, which makes next year's forecast look really conservative if they're dealing with satellites and higher margins. Now, I don't know what they can make, but I think they can make a lot more than the forecast say. So I've been buying them. I've seen these trade on PEs of 20 or 30. And they used to only be able to buy 10,000 shares when I last looked at them. And that was one of the things that put me off. I thought, oh, Viltronics, what are they? 20 pence. I'm going to be able to buy 10 or 20,000 shares without moving the price. And then, so I ignored it a bit. And I had a look on the other day, and MNs are dealing in 30,000 shares now, which is a lot better than 10. Still not great, but, you know, 30,000 shares is good enough. And so I've been in there and I've had a decent chunk, and I think that's one, you know, so many exciting things down here at the moment in the market. I'm sure more are going to reveal themselves, like, but when something comes like this, buy it, you know.
Yeah.
I bet in a year, you know, it's sort of in a year or two's time, you say, oh, blimey, you know, I looked at them when I had the trade statement out of 50p. That's, you know, that's the life of an investor trader, isn't it? You sit there and you look back, and you know.
Yeah, no, but I think you've
seen it before.
Yeah, I think you're right in terms of, you know, lots of people sort of say, you know, jam tomorrow story and all this sort of stuff. However, if SpaceX, and I think it's Starlink, is their low orbit one, if they've basically, you know, given the contract and got warrants, they've almost locked themselves into taking the equipment for Viltronic into its constellation. Now, just to give people numbers, Starlink is planning, I think, and perhaps already got 3,000 or 4,000 low orbit satellites around the world to be able to give them full sort of like, you know, coverage, etc. Most of the original contract, as I understand it from Viltronic with Starlink, is just base stations on the ground. However, I have heard a whisper from a very reliable source that they're looking to put on the antenna and wireless equipment onto the satellites as well to help them. Now, what's interesting about that is that because these are small satellites in low orbit, they basically crash and burn, literally. They come through the you know, the gravitational pull every 2 or 3 years and therefore have to be replaced. So if you're basically having this huge replacement cycle, you build up a huge high margin recurring revenue stream. And who knows what the massive total addressable market is. But I would say that if Starlink has invested indirectly and directly in Viltronic, that says everything, because Elon Musk is an engineering genius and he wouldn't do that unless he thought these guys had something.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's just, you know, you see these things once in a while, and you know, something like this will crop up once in a year, once in 2 years or whatever. And every time I've ignored them, I've sat there, you know, even been like Fever Tree comes to market, and you sit there and you think, oh, what rating that's on? And then you just sit there and watch them go at the market, you know, through the market roof again. And things like that pop along once or twice a year if you're lucky. And I've learned, you know, look, have a look at it when you find one. do much as much research as you can, as quick as you can. Make sure you're right, and then if you're right, back it. Yeah. And you know, see where you go. And I think this has got the ingredients. You know, I think if the Yanks start looking at it as well, you know, later on it starts getting. You can dream any number, can't you? Really?
Yeah, you can.
I don't know what it can be, you know. But obviously, everyone's got to take that. It's you know, I'm old in the shares. I'm going to say that. So treat it with complete contempt and do your own research and make sure that you know everything I've said is on all of these shares is true. Really.
Yeah. Well, I know Richard Staveley of Rockwood likes it as well, so you're in good company there.
Yeah, he's good. Yeah, Andy was saying to me, he's quite lately. He's in
Funding Circle.
Funding Circle, and his RM as well is another one that he's had that's been doing quite well.
Yeah. So the guy he used to work with, Lawrence Hulse from Dowgate. He's in MPAC as well, so they've picked quite a few of your portfolios. So you're in good company there, Richard.
So then, I think I'm probably in after them on at least one of them or two of them. Yeah. So
yeah, good. Okay. Yeah. Well, I just want to say a big thanks to everybody for the questions. Excellent for Richard, and I would say an enormous thanks to Cotney Rebel for all his insights and comments. Absolutely brilliant, and. I'm glad to see the Gunners aren't playing this weekend, which gives me a relief. But what's your sort of your latest? But where do you think England are going to get in the Euros? Because that tournament will have finished before we speak next.
My blood pressure during an Arsenal game once—it's twice as high during the game as it is before the game. And so I commit so much emotion to football games that I prefer to watch a recording now. So at least I save my blood pressure going up too high. But I presume the Euros are going to be like they always are. We'll get the semi-finals and go out on penalties or something.
You know, hopefully that's what we do. Germany.
Yeah, hopefully, but it probably will be. You know, it's probably how it's going to go. It's you know, you rewrite this book, these things happen over like Groundhog Day, time and time again when I watch a tournament. You start off with so much enthusiasm and hope. And I hope this time it goes right the way through to the end and we actually come home with a trophy because the country needs a bit of, you know, needs a bit of a lift, doesn't it? You know, we've had a year of few years of absolute doom and gloom from COVID onwards. And, you know, we just watched the D-Day veterans, you know, and looked at what all those guys did 8 years ago. And I think, you know, people were probably happier then during a war than we are at the moment. So the country needs a lift. So coming back with a big chunk of stuff to go in a cabinet would be good. Yeah. So let's hope we do.
Well, brilliant. Okay, well, thanks again, Richard. Really well done on your year-to-date returns and the returns from last year. So thanks very much and very much look forward in chatting again in a couple of months' time. So thanks, Richard.
Yeah, I look forward to it too. Cheers, Paul.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.